Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll talk about an approach to leadership that will help ensure that the bigger you get, the better you get. Andy, I think the first time I heard you talk about today's content was at the LeaderCast, and I remember you taking the people through really a time of confession just to prepare for the topic, and I was thinking it might be helpful to take our podcast audience through the same thing.
Yes, confession is good for the soul, someone once said. So yeah, and I've done this on several occasions where, especially with business leaders, to get us all on the same page. So I have them repeat after me. So you don't have to repeat after me as you drive along in your car, or on the treadmill, or whatever you're doing, multitasking. No one sits and listens to these without something else going on. I understand that. But essentially, I just think every once in a while we need to get our heads around the fact that even though we're in charge, we don't always know what to do. So I just have leaders say that. I may be in charge, but I don't always know what to do. The second confession is I may be in charge, but I don't have all the answers. One of the worst things a leader or anybody can do is to pretend to know something they don't. And in leadership, there is constant pressure to pretend. So let's just say it. I may be in charge, but that doesn't mean I have all the answers. And then the third confession was, I am never the smartest person in the room. I'm just the leader. And again, I think we beat ourselves up thinking, since I'm in charge, I'm the division director of the department, I'm in charge of sales, I founded this organization, then I've got to be the smartest person in the room. And that's just not the case.
Well, how do those confessions just set us up for today's topic?
Well, I think they remind us that we didn't get to where we are in leadership because we're the best leader or that we're even the best candidate for our jobs. We got to where we are because we knew somebody, we're related to somebody, you outperformed somebody temporarily. You might have been a hiring mistake. The person ahead of you was let go and you were next in line. You beat everybody to an idea. That's really our story. Mm. We were the first in our area of the country to do the kind of church we're doing. So it wasn't that we were the smartest. We just got here first. And everybody in business knows if you're the first to a product or the first to an idea, you're considered the leader, whether you are the best at that or not. So again, we all end up where we are in leadership for a variety of reasons, but let's not kid ourselves. It's not because we're the most competent. It's not because we're the most skilled. And it's not because we're the smartest. But we can all get better in all three of those areas. And that sets us up for our conversation. All of that to say, the last thing we need to do is overthink or overcomplicate the role of leadership. As much as we love to read about it, as much as it's been written about it, again, we can all make it a lot more complicated than it really needs to be. And for me, and the reason I love the content we're going to cover in just a few minutes, is I have to make things simple. I'm just not that smart. And when I was in school, I had to study harder than everybody else. I really felt, especially in college, that in just about every class, I felt like everybody in the class had already had the class. It's like they already knew it. They were conversant in topics. And I'm like, wait a minute. I thought the point of this class was to get us to the point where we could be conversant on this topic. And I felt like everybody was already there. So for me, I learned early on in the world of academics, I have to make things simple for them to stick. And so when it comes to leadership, I've had to do the same thing. And that reminds me of something I heard Jim Collins say not too long ago at a conference, and it was sort of a spinoff of something he's written. He said, level five leaders have the humility to aspire to be the dumbest person in the room. Level five leaders have the humility to aspire. And when he said that, what he meant was surround yourself with smarter people. And when I read that, I thought, I've never felt like that was a struggle. I've just assumed that. So anyway, the point being, I have to make things simple. And so we're going to talk about making leadership simple.
Well, Andy, obviously, our goal is to make leadership simple, but organizations aren't simple. They're complex.
You're right, Lane. Organizations are complex, and growing organizations grow in complexity. And that is an unavoidable reality. But at the same time, as leaders, our leadership or our approach to leadership should not follow suit. Our approach to leadership should not become more complex, because in the midst of complexity, it's easy to lose clarity, and clarity may be a leader's best friend.
Well, Andy, obviously over the past 17 years, our organization has become more complex. How has this played out for you as a leader?
My approach to our growing complexity, and we started with a single site as a church, and then we went multi-site, and now we have television, and now we have publishing and all these things. I realized early on, many years ago, that I needed something that I could retreat to as a leader. And by retreat, I mean as I began to get drawn into things I didn't need to be drawn into, as I found myself in decision-making environments where I certainly wasn't the smartest person in the room, and yet at the end of the conversation, people looked to me, you know, for the final decision. I needed something that I could go back to and sort of square one. You know, essentially, this is a football. You know, this is how we put on our socks, that sort of thing. So I came up with these three simple statements. They hang in my office. And again, when I feel like things are getting a little bit muddy, when I leave a meeting and there's too many open-ended things and I begin to feel like maybe I don't have a grasp of what to do next, this is what I retreat to. And it has served me well. It's recentered me. And I think these are transferable to just about any leadership environment.
Okay. So when the complexity of leading starts to overwhelm you, what are these three things you retreat to?
It's three questions. It's what are we doing? Why are we doing it? Where do I fit in? What are we doing? Why are we doing it? Where do I fit in?
All right. Well, let's just take those one at a time. Number one, what are we doing?
Well, the last thing we need is another lecture on mission statements, you know. But the truth is, you know, Stephen Covey told us back in 1989, 25 million copies ago in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, that a simple statement, a simple mission statement or vision statement, whatever you call it, is really a North Star for an organization or division or department. And so for me, there's times I have to just go back in my office and say, okay, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing? Because that is what cuts through the complexity in an organization. It's, you know, it's Steve Jobs walking in saying, we are going to create computers that are easy to use. That's what we're doing. We are creating computers that are easy to use. And so I think everybody needs that statement. And for me as a leader, that's what I have to retreat back to. That's where I get recentered again to cut through the complexity and the problem solving and just all the stuff that gets unresolved. Because in leadership, you know, we wish it was like mowing our lawn. You know, you mow your lawn, you're finished. You know, you put it up, you know, but there's nothing in leadership like that. So we need some recentering statements. And the first one for me is, what are we doing?
Well, Andy, specifically, why is this clear mission statement so important?
Well, you know, if there's clarity around what are we doing, then most decisions are already decided. I mean, there's been so many times you've experienced it. We're lost in the weeds. We're just, you know, we've got all these ideas. Everybody's got an opinion. And then you step back and you say, okay, here's what we're here to do. Oh, yeah. And yeah. Suddenly,
question
you know,
answered.
The eight yeah. ideas prioritize themselves. Because, again, we get lost in the details and we have to deal with details in complex organizations. If you don't know exactly what you're doing, you know, you're going to have a hard time doing it. You're never going to be great at it. You'll have a hard time convincing anybody else to join you. You know, I say to organizational leaders all the time, you know, the reason you don't have a simple statement, a simple sticky statement, the reason you don't have it, it's not because of your industry or your organization. You just haven't sat down and taken the time to create one and craft one. And it's just powerful. What are we doing? And when everybody answers that question the same way, it's the backboard. You bank every shot off of that. It's, you know, it's the litmus test. It's the filter. So again, but for me as a leader, in dealing with the complexity of a growing organization, I just have to stop and say, okay, what are we doing?
All right, that's your first question. What are we doing? Your second question for keeping leadership simple, why are we doing it?
Yeah, now the why question is where we find inspiration. I love what Patrick Lencioni says in his book, The Advantage, that every organization needs to somehow come up with a statement of purpose that's just short of to make the world a better place, you know, to make the world a better place. You know, how close can an organization get to answering the question why to make the world a better place? This is where we find inspiration. This question addresses what's at stake. What goes away if we go away? What problem goes unsolved in our community or the country if our organization goes away? What question goes unanswered? What service goes unprovided? You know, why are we doing this? And in that discussion, you know, around why are we here, it pretty quickly goes beyond money. It goes beyond a specific product. It goes to human experience. For those of us who work in the local church, perhaps this is an easier question to answer. But I think every organization or even industry can answer this question. How do we make the world a better place? And again, that's where people find inspiration. That's when you give your heart and your soul, not just your hands, to an organization. So what are we doing? Why are we doing it? And again, the why answers the question, what would be lacking in our community, in our country, if we were to go away? And again, that's inspiring. And Lane, while we're on this, and this is a little bit of a rabbit trail, but I think this is so important. I think as leaders wrestle with the question, why are we doing this? again, beyond what's written on the letterhead and beyond what's written on the wall, individually, personally, why are we doing this? I think the leader has to ask, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And I tell leaders all the time, don't be afraid to ask that question. That is not a selfish question. The why am I doing this has launched extraordinary organizations. Personal passion is far more easily translated and transmitted and passed down through the ranks of an organization than the corporate answer to that question sometimes. And I think for many of us, oftentimes the why goes back to a sense of calling. Why did I join this organization to begin with? Why did we start this organization to begin with? Why did I get permission to launch this new initiative to begin with? Mm-hmm. All those why questions, again, it interfaces with human experience and inspiration. So I tell leaders all the time, don't think that's selfish to ask, why am I doing this? Because again, if you think about, especially in the nonprofit world, every great nonprofit began with an individual who had a personal passion or a personal burden or a personal concern, and that personal concern became an organization, and in some cases, organizations that have impacted the entire world. Mm. So the why is a really important question because, again, that's where we find our personal and corporate inspiration.
Andy, I remember at LeaderCast you made the statement, why has the power to get you through the tough times?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Why is why we don't quit. You know, why is I can't leave, I can't quit, I can't shut this thing down, I can't quit doing this because here's what's at stake. This mm-hmm. won't get done. These people won't be impacted. This product won't get distributed. So again, especially in the tough times, here's what we're doing, but why are we doing it? Oh, yeah. In fact, I remember some years ago, you were there. We hit a big bump in the early days and people were leaving and it was too difficult to be a part of this organization. And there were some specific families mm-hmm. that were leaving our church, and this was tough. And I remember saying, hey, would we have started this without those families? And we all looked around the room and said, yeah. Yeah, they are not why we're doing this.
Right.
But again, if you lose sight of why, when you hit certain bumps, you begin to lose your sense of motivation. So again, a clear answer to the why question is very, very important for leaders.
And the last question, we started with what are you doing, then why are you doing it? The final question, where do I fit in?
The where do I fit in question goes to the issue of what is my critical role as a leader? I mean, I could do a lot of things, and if you're the boss, you can do everything. I mean, you can just walk into every meeting, you know, and be involved. But what is my critical role? What is my unique contribution? I can so easily get drawn into the minutiae and find myself in decision-making environments that I don't really need to be there. Mm. What is my core responsibility? Am I doing what only I can do? You know, am I in my sweet spot as a leader? And again, asking that question recenters me in terms of how I spend my time, who I spend my time with, and which decision-making environments that I fully engage with. So again, it's a question that just recenters me as a leader.
So Andy, how does asking where do I fit in play out in your daily life?
Well, specifically, it helps me schedule to my strengths and schedule to the areas where I make the biggest impact in the organization. And for me, my administrative assistant, Diane Grant, is so helpful with this because she'll see me gravitating towards something I just shouldn't be involved in. And she just has permission to say, okay, do you really need to go to that meeting? Do you really want to engage in that? Because as leaders, we understand this. If we put our toe in certain ponds, we have to stay in the pond until everything is resolved. Do you really want to go there? Andy, is this the best use of your time? So again, it's a very recentering question. And this goes to something we've talked about before. You know, we are at our best when we're doing what we do best. Mm. And our organization is at its best when everybody is doing what they do best. So asking the question, where do I fit in, keeps me in that place where I'm doing what I do best and where I make, you know, the biggest contribution, rather than spreading myself thin and getting involved with a lot of things.
Well, Andy, I know that you've helped your direct reports figure out where we fit in by actually telling us where we fit in with our one-sentence job descriptions.
Yeah, years ago, and I think John Maxwell was the first person I heard talk about this, the idea of creating one-sentence job descriptions for your key players. Again, it's sort of the, hey, if everything else breaks, if you forget everything else, here's the one thing that you've got to do. And this took a long time. Mm. And every once in a while, I go back to it to make sure these are accurate. But I sat down, I looked at our key players in our organization, and I boiled their, not their job description so much, even though we call it that, is their responsibility description to one sentence. So it's, Lane, if all else fails, here's what I expect you to do. You know, Rick, if all else fails, here's what I expect of you. And this was very helpful for me, and I think it was helpful for my direct reports in terms of establishing what I felt like their primary benefit was to the organization as well as what I expected. In fact, I brought some of these, so I thought it might be fun to talk about these. Yeah. So my one-sentence job description is to inspire our staff and congregations to remain fully engaged in our mission and strategy. That's it. If all else fails, break the glass, you know, pull out the card, inspire our staff and congregations to remain fully engaged in our mission and strategy. That's it. You know, what am I doing? You know, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? How do I fit in? That's it. For our CFO, his one-sentence job description was to create, implement, and monitor systems that ensure our organization remains fiscally secure. So, Rick, if all else fails, you are to create and implement and monitor systems that ensure our organization remains fiscally secure. So, again, with everything he's got going on in this growing, you know, complex organization with real estate purchases and everything else, Rick, here's the thing. For my administrative assistant, I think this is so powerful, and actually Diane came up with the first draft of this because, to be honest, I was thinking more of my direct reports rather than my administrative assistant. And she said, well, I need a one-sentence job description. I need to be able to answer the question, you know, where do I fit in? And so here's what we landed on with her, and I love this. Diane's one-sentence job description, keep my path, my being me, or to keep Andy's path clear of non-essential tasks and decisions so that he can do what only he can do. Now, think about that. Imagine if your administrative assistant showed up at work every day and heard, you know, what's the one thing, you know, where do you fit in to keep Andy's path clear of non-essential tasks. That's Andy, do you really need to go there? Do you really need to get involved in this? And decisions so that he can do what only he can do. So again, her one-sentence job description actually leans into helping me stay in the place I need to be. For our service programming director, it's create an unforgettable experience for those who attend our worship services. So again, I went through every leadership team member. I said, here's the one thing, so that you know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and here's where I believe you fit in.
Andy, what do you say to the listeners who are thinking, our organization is too broad, it's too complex, there's no way I can do that for everyone?
What I would say is this. As you think about your direct reports, you have a very short list in your mind of what you think they should be doing. In other words, you're measuring their success through a very narrow grid. Now, when they show up at work every day, they may think in terms of they have 20 things to do. But I guarantee you, when we think about our direct reports, we don't think of the 20 things. We think of the thing that's most important to us. They need to know what that is. And I think if you spend the time, you can narrow that down to a single sentence. And granted, their job description is going to be broader than a sentence. Their responsibilities will be broader than a sentence. But there's the one or two things that you know makes the biggest difference in the organization in terms of their involvement. So then when I bring these three questions to our entire organization and I ask, what are we doing? The answer to the what are we doing is the same for everyone. When I say, why are we doing it? The answer to why are we doing it is the same for everyone. But the question of how do I fit in is as specific as the individual. So my responsibility as a leader is to help those who report to me specifically understand what I'm looking to them to do as it relates to what are we doing and why are we doing it. And if everybody in the organization takes the time to create that kind of expectation or statement, it just streamlines the whole organization and it helps everybody figure out how to recenter as the organization becomes more complex.
Andy, I remember years ago, we actually went to a training, a staff training at the Ritz-Carlton, where we saw this in action.
Yeah. Again, back to the Stephen Covey book, he talked about the Ritz-Carlton as a place where at every level of the organization, they had mission statements, and he mentioned the bellman. And so Bill Johnson, who owned the entire or the company, the Ritz-Carlton company at the time, was a friend of my dad's. And so I had occasion to be with him one afternoon. And I said, Bill, I said, I have a question. I said, Stephen Covey is, you know, making your organization even more famous on the service side and the organizational side. And he says that mission statements are everywhere at the Ritz-Carlton. And so I said, how do you get a bellman to have a mission statement? Nobody probably grows up in the United States especially thinking, when I grow up, I want to be a bellman. Obviously, it's an honorable job, and they make great money and great tips. But it's, you know, you end up as a bellman, a mission statement. I said, how do you motivate maids and cooks and bellmen to have mission statements? He said, well, to understand that, you would have to go through our training. And I'm like, okay. So about five or six of us went and spent a couple of days here in Atlanta at Ritz-Carlton, the hotel, because they were doing a training for maids, cooks, and bellmen is the one that you're referring to. And as we sat through that training, we began to understand how you get people at every level of the organization not only to develop but to own a mission statement to where it really recenters them. And we saw, especially as he talked to the maids, and that's the term they use, the maids, the ladies specifically that clean the room. And he said, you know, you just have to remember when things are going crazy, things are chaotic, the guests are demanding because, you know, they're dealing with high-level rich people who, you know, want things to be perfect. He said, you just remember, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. That's what we do. We don't clean rooms. We don't pick up people's messes. We are ladies and gentlemen. So that is the filter. That is the grid through which you evaluate every word and every response. We are ladies and gentlemen. He said, if you'll remember, he said, we're not servants, and we're not servants to ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
We are ladies and gentlemen who serve ladies and gentlemen. And I thought, there it is, the power of a well-crafted statement that takes this complex job description and schedule and boils it down to, you know, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? Where do I fit in? Here's how I fit in. I am a lady. I am a gentleman serving ladies and gentlemen. So we walked away from there thinking, okay, this isn't just something people write about. This really has a trickle-down effect in an entire organization. And so we've tried to implement that.
Landy, as we wrap up today's podcast, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah. I think all of our listeners should spend a little bit of time answering these three questions. What are you doing organizationally? What does your organization do? I mean, I'm certainly not the first person to ask you that question. Why are you doing it? Why does your company exist? Why does your organization exist? What goes missing if you go out of business? And where do you fit in? And do the people who report to you know where you think they fit in? And answering those questions makes leadership a whole lot simpler.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for taking this time with us today. And thank you to our audience for listening. To hear more from Andy on leadership, please visit andystanley.com.